The Vietnam War is the subject of Ken Burns' latest epic series on PBS, and today on Local On Point, I talk with Alan Oxzier of Soldotna about his experiences in the war. Listeners know Alan as a longtime station manager here at KDLL, but may not know that he spent 11 months carrying an M60 machine gun and jumping out of helicopters in the jungles of Vietnam in 1971 and 72. He came back staunchly patriotic, but adamantly anti-war. We begin our pre-recorded talk with discussion of the Ken Burns documentary. The Ken Burns series, Vietnam, has been getting a lot of attention, like a lot of his past documentaries. Mm-hmm. And you've seen a couple of the episodes so far. Do you think it's holding up to his past work?
Oh, absolutely. I've really only seen so far the first two episodes, but certainly did go along with what I knew and what I'd learned later on. And yes, Ken Burns is a very well-respected journalist, and I think he's covering more than just the one side.
I was just going to ask that. What do you think about that?
That's one nice thing about the Ken Burns stuff is he's not shy about exploring more than one side and more than one opinion. He will lay out all of the facts and figures and let you kind of decide what you think.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, when I was a little kid, they used to have TV shows like McHale's Navy and Hogan's Heroes.
Right.
There've never been any comedies about Vietnam,
and probably not.
Yeah, I can only think of really one TV show that was China Beach. I think it was about nurses,
right? Yeah,
and but there have been several movies, and they've all been very serious. Do you think that it's well? I guess I don't know why that might be, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts. Is it because the war was so immediate in people's living rooms every night, or?
Well, I know that there was a kind of a comparison between MASH and Vietnam, and that MASH was the only way that they could portray a war like Korea or Vietnam, and still get away with it and make it funny and make you think at the same time. So I have a feeling that MASH was that program during the Vietnam War. But certainly, I would think that after this many years out that we could come up with something in addition. So,
mm-hmm. How old were you when you were? You said you were drafted?
I was drafted,
what
yeah.
year was that?
1970.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so that was 3 years before the end of the war?
Technically, it was 5 years before the end of when the U.S. withdrew from Saigon.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And I was in Vietnam 71, 72.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And how old were you there?
Actually, I turned 23 in the field. And as a birthday present, all of the guys in my platoon said that I could sleep through the night and didn't have to pull guard duty.
Wow. What were you doing before you were drafted?
Well, I just graduated from college. I went to university at Northern Arizona University, and I had minored in Russian language. So when I got drafted and got my draft notice, I thought, sure as heck, they were going to send me to Monterey Language School, and I'd get to listen to the headphones and go over to Berlin and listen to Radio Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, I probably checked the little box that said I enjoy camping.
Oh, boy.
So I got put in the infantry.
Mm-hmm. You're kind of built like a football player. You know, that probably probably helped, I suppose, or hurt, or swayed who makes those decisions.
No, nobody in the Pentagon saw me, so it was all just paperwork at the time. You know. But yeah, I was one of the bigger guys in my outfit, so yeah. I was also one of the oldest guys, too.
Oh, at 20...
At 23, 22, 23, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Most of the guys were under 20, I'm going to say. Certainly under 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what was that like? Were you looked up to, or...
Well, they called me the old man. That's for sure. And also because I was big, they always expected me to carry the M60 machine gun, which at first I didn't want to because I thought it was going to be too much weight. But then when I did finally carry it, it was like a counterweight to my backpack, and had absolutely no problem with the M60 machine gun. No matter what happened, it was always reliable and would work. So I got to where I loved it, and they couldn't take it away from me.
Oh. Were you and I know you're have been an avid outdoorsman. Were you mm-hmm. that way as a youngster?
Oh yeah, I've been hunting since I think the first time I went hunting with my dad was, I'm going to say 5 years old. We went duck hunting, and went deer hunting every year and javelina hunting. I grew up in Arizona, so that was back when all you needed was a license to go out, and certainly no any kind of gun control problems. So we went out every year and hunted javelina and deer, and I know my dad went hunting for elk a couple times. I kind of stopped hunting birds just because it was too much work for not enough meat.
Javelinas, those are those little pig-like things, right?
Yeah, wild boars. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. Mm-hmm. What were you made an officer being a college graduate?
During basic training, everybody that was a college graduate went into a little room, and they made an offer that if we went to OCS, that we would come out as guaranteed as a second lieutenant. And if you came out, if you had a master's, you're guaranteed a first lieutenant, and doctorate would come out as a captain, but it required that you would enlist for a full 6 years and go to OCS, and I wasn't willing to stay in for 6 years. By that time, I knew I wasn't made for this kind of a lifestyle, so uh-huh. No, I did not take that option.
Oh, what was the term of service for a draftee then?
At that time, it was 2 years of active duty, 2 years active reserve, and 2 years inactive reserve. And because I did serve a full tour in Vietnam, I got an early out so I could go back to college. So I actually only served 18 months of active duty.
Mm-hmm. Where did you serve in Vietnam?
Mostly out of Chu Lai, which was a fire base and hospital area. That was with the AmeriCal division. And also LZ Dottie was our main point of departure. When the AmeriCal division stood down in, I think it was November of 71, I got transferred to the 101st Airborne out of Da Nang and Camp Eagle. So the end of my tour was farther north than I had been.
Oh, okay. Was it a very active area of fighting?
Seemed active to me. Plenty active as far as I was concerned, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever injured?
The only time I got injured was from friendly artillery fire, and either a piece of shrapnel or a rock hit me in the leg, but it wasn't enough to even make a bruise. So, no, I was never injured.
Wow. Man.
It was scary.
I can imagine. Just even being somewhere around artillery would be scary. Yes. For a regular person.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of preparation did the Army give you? Here you are, fresh out of college. You go through boot camp. Was that preparation enough for what you eventually found when you got to Vietnam?
Well, in the Army, it's basic training. Marines are boot camp. But it was 6 weeks of basic training, and then an additional 6 weeks of, for me, it was advanced in infantry training. And more or less what you did was you got to fire all of the weapons that were available, and again do a lot of camping out and living in tents or under the ground digging bunkers and digging foxholes and things like that. But I took my basic and infantry training in Fort Lewis, Washington, which is very cold and rainy and snowy. So no, it was not at all preparation for Vietnam. But truthfully, no matter what you do for learning and preparation, until you actually get there, you don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I know that you're a movie buff. Mm-hmm. Have any of the movies about Vietnam captured at all your experience?
Oh yes, several different movies. I do enjoy war movies, always have, and hopefully always will. But always give you something to think about. The ones that I really liked were Hamburger Hill, and 84 Charlie Mopek, which was a very small film, probably independent film. It was about a motion picture camera operator that was in the Army that went out with an infantry platoon. So you got to see the action from the ground level and an infantry level. So those are two I would recommend.
What was the second one again?
84 Charlie Mopek.
Okay, and that was that a cinematic film or documentary?
It was cinematic, yeah. It was a drama.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. The first one, that was a John Wayne movie, wasn't it? Hamburger Hill?
Hamburger? No, huh? No, that was no. John Wayne was the Green Berets.
Green Berets.
Yeah. No, Hamburger Hill was basically about the infantry taking a hill away from the Viet Cong, and then after it's all over with all this big battle, the higher-hires just tell them, okay, now you can evacuate. So pretty much just take the area and then leave.
Wow. Was there, did you experience anything like that?
Oh, yeah, all of it. That was, we would never take an area and then hold it. Most of our missions were going out and accessing the Central Highlands when I was with AmeriCal, and search and destroy missions where you'd go find where the Viet Cong or NVA were and then destroy their bases or destroy their caches and then just leave. So there was basically no follow-up, no control of any area other than the fire bases and the fortified hamlets or that they called them.
Huh. Your politics now, you're both a member of the NRA and the American Civil Liberties Union.
Yes.
which, you know, is a nice balance. Did you develop your personal politics after the war, or were you a hippie during college? Or
Let's say I was not exactly a hippie during college. I was mildly opposed to the war before I went over. But after I came back, I was very dramatically opposed to the war, and realized at the time that, you know, the government wasn't telling us the truth and they didn't have any idea what was going on over there. So I kind of got cynical.
Yeah. Ah. The other thing that I know about you is that you're extremely patriotic in that you believe in honoring the warriors and respecting the flag.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I can only imagine that some people might have lost that after becoming so cynical after your experience like yours.
Well, one thing I know is that the people that go fight the war are not the ones that are sending people to fight the war. It's the politicians that make a war, and the warriors simply have to go and survive. And so there's a big separation between, you know, again, what Congress and the Pentagon does and what the individual soldiers on the ground experience. So there's a big disconnect there.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that there's not enough realization among those who have not served that it's possible to be patriotic and for peace?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, well, one of the buttons that I wore on my hat during the time I was there, I wore a Bush hat, and one of my buttons said, "I am an effete snob for peace," which was a kind of a dig at Spiro Agnew, who made some kind of a comment about that. And yeah, I'm all for peace. No, fighting a war is stupid.
Have you been active in veterans activities in the ensuing 40 years?
Not really. When I got back, First of all, the Veterans Administration at that time was not easy to deal with, and I had no particular reason to deal with them. And I wasn't necessarily interested in going and sitting at the VFW or something and just telling war stories with other guys. So I really kind of avoided any joining any of those organizations. Now, in the last 10 years, I have finally joined the American Legion and have begun dealing with the Veterans Administration, and things are much improved. So if you are a veteran, I suggest that you do go to the VA and check out your benefits and your rights.
Do you still have friends from Vietnam?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. You still in touch with them?
Sporadic on most things, yeah.
You want to talk about that?
I have, there's two or three guys that I was in Vietnam with that, you know, I certainly have on my email list. And, you know, one of them lives in Florida, one of them is in Michigan, so it's not like, or Minnesota, so it isn't like I go see them every weekend or anything like that. But we certainly have contact and send around all kinds of information about veteran benefits and problems and that kind of things. And they're actually kind of two of the reasons that I did get involved with the Veterans Administration. So I appreciate that contact. And then, you know, I know several guys who served in Vietnam, not necessarily in my units, but had done their tours. So whenever we get together, we tell each other war stories, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's usually private home, sitting around talking to each other, not necessarily in a big group.
Right. Did you lose any friends during the war?
Oh, yes, I did. I have two real good friends that are on the wall, listed on the wall, and then I have five cousins that are on the wall. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Have you been to the wall in D.C.?
I've been to the wall, I think, three times, and I've seen the traveling wall couple of times whenever it happens to be in an area where I am, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, that's a very healing kind of experience, and if anybody is a veteran, you owe it to yourself to go to the wall.
Yeah, you know, they had that traveling wall down in Kodiak here a few years ago, and it was so touching. The veterans organizations that were down there read the name of every single person on there.
That's a lot of names.
50-some thousand,
58,846, I believe.
Wow. Mm. And, you know, it was set up on the football field, and it took, I want to say, 2 days, and they went nonstop, day and night.
I'm sure it did, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. How did the war change you? When you came back to the United States, you said you were cynical and you were even more anti-war, but, you know, the long-term, any long-term changes, you know, to your attitude towards one thing or another?
Probably, but I don't know if I could, I don't know if I would be able to distinguish exactly what effect it had on me, other than yes, it did, and I certainly think about the war every day since then. I cannot pick up anything that has even a slight feel like a pistol grip without thinking of my machine guns. I kind of gave up hunting because of that. I don't need the meat anymore, which I used to go hunting for. But it kind of lost its thrill of hunting. I don't go camping very much anymore. I don't know that that's necessarily a direct result, but probably an eventual result. And I certainly enjoy being comfortable now and changing my clothes and taking showers.
You spent some time as a mountain man.
Yes,
and that's an actual thing. It's like I want to say it's like a group, but you guys kind of do it solo.
Solitarily.
Solitarily.
Yeah.
And Was that after the war?
Yes, it was. And I'm going to say that was kind of because I had been in the war. I wasn't really career oriented after I got out of the war. I was more, I survived, I'm going to have fun, I'm going to do what I want from now on. And I had always wanted to be a mountain man. I started reading about that mountain man period in high school and just kind of fell in love with the romance of it all. And so at one point in my life, I got to where it was, okay, now it's time to either go be a mountain man or stop thinking about it. So I went ahead and did that. And that was probably my last big, long camping trip. And that was about a year and a half. So.
A year and a half?
Yeah.
Now, you've told me about it before, but you had like a horse and a pack mule, and you made your own clothes and
right.
Wandered through the wilderness?
Some of the things I had started accumulating before I went on the trip, and some of the things I made to go on the trip, I made a buffalo coat that I used to wear around Bethel that you might remember. I made my own saddle, or actually I was the apprentice saddle maker on that. I made my own pack saddles and panniers. Those are the bags that hang off of a pack saddle. I had, over the course of about a year and a half, I did have, I think it was 5 different horses and 3 different mules and 1 burro that I rode. Started out in Fort Bridger, Wyoming, Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Rode down to Durango, Colorado, through the Rocky Mountains, and then back up to Fort Bridger the next summer. During the winter, I worked on a cattle ranch with one of the guys that I was on the trip with. So, we insisted that he pay us a dollar a day and found, which was the traditional cowboy wages back in the 1880s and stuff. But so a kind of a combination of a cowboy and mountain man. But all of the equipment I had was available in the Rocky Mountains prior to 1840. So lit our fires with flint and steel, carried black powder rifles and shotguns and pistols, lived off the land as much as we could. But of course, you can't really hunt and fish like you used to be able to. So a lot of the stuff was bringing foods with us that would have been available. Dried beans, dried fruit, coffee, tea, oats. We carried oats for the horses and we could eat the oats ourselves and then whatever we could find along the way.
Was that, to me, it sounds like it might have been cathartic.
Oh yeah, very much cathartic. And I'm glad I did it. Again, it was romantic in retrospect. At the time, is a lot of hard work, but it was also very free time. I mean, you know, we did not have a schedule. If we got up in the morning when we felt like it and ate breakfast and packed up and left and rode as far as we wanted to and then find a nice campsite and set up again. And I started with 2 other guys. And one of the guys dropped off partway through, and then I finished the trip with my other partner, Buck. So,
I want to know how you went through so many horses.
Were
they just tiny horses, and you were a big guy, or you wore them out?
Some of it wearing them out, and some of them trading one horse to get 2 pack mules and things like that. So just swapping and trading, and as the situation required.
Okay, so it's not like you had a pet horse.
No, uh-uh.
They were tools, just like they were back in ye olden day.
They were tools, yes. I did have a dog, but he also had a job. When I first got him, my idea was that I'd wake up in the morning and say, okay, Sterling, go get the horses. Well, he'd go out and get the horses, but he'd chase them around. He never really brought them back to camp, so that didn't quite work. But he had his own backpack that he carried, and, you know, he was actually also my blanket dog. I'd put him into the bed with me to start warming up the bed at night when it was really cold. And then he didn't stay there because he got a lot hotter than I did. So.
Right. Back to the war.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any good memories or good experiences? I imagine that would be with your comrades.
One thing I did, I have lots of different little stories of funny things that happen and stuff. But one very good memory that I have is that my mom was a friend with someone who worked for Rosarita Mexican Food. And Rosarita was one of the very few corporate entities that supported the warriors, not necessarily the war. And they sent me a care package that arrived when we were out in the field. And in this package, there were it was a can of tortillas, couple cans of refried beans, some cooked taco meat, enchilada sauce, and I can't remember what else that was there. But I wasn't able to carry all of that with me, obviously, in my backpack. So Alex Montoya and I, and one of our guys in the platoons, we made up a great big Mexican feast one night for all of the guys in our platoon. And some of the guys had never had a taco in their life, so that was kind of fun.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. So buy Rosarita Mexican food anytime you get a chance.
You know, I think I've seen some in your pantry.
Yep, could be.
Yeah. What would you say to Ken Burns if he came and put a camera in front of you and talked to you about the Vietnam War?
Well, first of all, I'd say thank you very much for looking at this, and also thank you for all of the different sides and not listening to just the propaganda or one side, but looking at everything.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been back?
No, it's pretty hot, and I don't really like hot anymore. Vietnam is a beautiful country, just gorgeous green mountains and rice paddies and everything. Beautiful country, but again, it's really, really hot all the time, and I don't need to go back to hot.
Uh-huh. I have seen a lot of, reports on TV and articles of veterans who have gone back.
Right.
What do you think of that in general?
Oh, everyone that I've heard of or that has gone over there and talks about it has found it to be cathartic or enjoyable. And apparently the Vietnamese love to have American GIs come back because to them, we were honorable fighters. And that they appreciate what we did for our country the same way that now we appreciate what they did for their country, or at least I do. It wasn't a communist insurgency. It was a nationalist independence movement, I think. And that's one of the things that Ken Burns brings out, is that Ho Chi Minh was not necessarily a communist, but he was a nationalist, and his big concern was to achieve an independent Vietnam. If we had stayed allies with him, as we were during World War II, if we had stayed his ally, he never would have invited the Chinese in, and we would have been good friends with him till now, I'm sure. So,
wow. After the war, a lot of Vietnamese, at first refugees from the South, spouses and children,
yeah,
came to America, mm-hmm. In the years since normalized relations, which happened very quickly, I think, reasonably quickly. More Vietnamese have come to America. Have you met any and talked with them? Have you shared experiences?
Funny you should mention that. I very recently got back from a trip down to the south of the U.S. Went specifically for the solar eclipse viewing. As part of the trip, I went to visit the Museum of the 8th Air Force, which had served in World War II in Europe. And they'd also served afterwards, obviously. And when I was in there, there was one part where they had a helicopter, a Huey helicopter that I had been airlifted back and forth in the field. So a lot of movement via the Hueys. And I was telling my wife, Mari, that this was where I would sit in the open door because I had the machine gun and had to get off first. A gentleman who heard me talk to her came up to me later on and asked me if I'd served in Vietnam, and I said yes. And he said, thank you very much. I'm one of those Vietnamese that came over after the U.S. left, and I want to thank you for your service. And I said, well, thank you very much, and welcome to your new home. And then he introduced me to his nephew, who was going to join the SEALs. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man. And right there is the great thing about America.
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you what.
We need the refugees. They pay us back.
Man. Anything else I should ask you here, or you want to add?
Oh, boy. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's a good enough answer for me.
Okay.
Alan Luxier, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us for our Fun Drive special. And I hope everybody gets a chance to see Ken Burns' Vietnam War series. I've caught part of one episode, and it does look just as good as all the other ones.
Every one of his other ones, yes, yes, it does. So, yes, watch that, and also donate to KDLL.
Thank you for that, too.
Yeah, 283-8433.
You're a real pro. I love it.